Welcome, Arizona. It is hour now, number two of Rosie on the House. For our affiliates that don't catch the 7 o'clock hour, we had a special guest in talking about Arizona outdoors. The son of Bob Hirsch, Mr. Steve Hirsch, was in. You can get that hour live via podcast at rosieonthehouse.com. So now hour number two brings us into the Outdoor Living Hour, and this Saturday we are talking trees with Mr. John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service, certified arborist, and Rosie on the House certified partner. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, good morning.
And as usual, you have a tree to start off the broadcast.
Sort of. Well, you know, I wanted to mention the sago palm this week because it's a really cool plant. And it's really not actually a palm. It's a cycad. And it's a very large, you know, palm-like plant, really more related to a conifer. It's a very old, historic plant, probably one of the oldest plants on the planet. And it's really cool. They grow here in our plant hardiness zones. And I wanted to mention them because we heard a caller called in this week, I believe, to your station and mentioned they saw these strange orange balls that had formed on the inside of their sago palm, and they wondered what they are. Well, it's unusual because sago palms don't fruit until they're 15 to 20 years of age, so they have an older plant to even be able to be able to fruit. And that's the female plant, and it produces this little cluster of these golf ball kind of walnut-sized orange seeds that are encased in this little center part of the tree, and they're really, really cool. If you have them, if you've ever seen them, you know how ornate they can be. Some people say, well, should I get rid of them? Because they almost look like, you know, it's so foreign to the plant, people want to take them out. But I would recommend keeping them in, enjoy it, because in the next couple of weeks, they'll continue to unfold very, very slowly. And they're just observe it and enjoy it, because it's a very rare thing. Once they reach maturity, they will fruit like that every maybe 2 to 4 years. So it's still an unusual occurrence. They need to be pollinated by a male plant. These sagos have male and female. And if you have one that's near the, it can be, if you have a male in the area, it can be spontaneously pollinated. But either way, they're really a cool display, both male and female. And if you have those in your yard, you should keep them. What I like about the sago is it's not only well adapted to this area, but it's a gorgeous kind of regal plant. You see them often in people's entryways and atriums to the front of the house. They can grow to be 5 feet wide. Unfortunately, they start out real small, as most, you know, small, you know, succulents and palms grow. People don't anticipate that they're going to be 5 feet across. So if you put a sago in, they're very, very slow growing, but they will eventually get to be about 5 feet across. So make sure you have some lateral distance of about at least 3 feet from the center of the planting area to your sidewalk or wherever. But they are just a really nice plant. Look them up, sago, S-A-G-O. And they're a really desirable plant. They need to be have a little bit of afternoon shade, not a lot of direct sun, even though they're good for our area in terms of the hardiness zone. Best to keep them out of direct sun.
And that, you said you can look it up. You can find that at Rosie on the House. We put it under tree. Should I put it under a different category?
Just put it there.
Almost tree. Almost tree.
Because it's called a palm, so people will look it up under trees. So
I'll add a subcategory, palm, under tree. How's that?
There you go.
But you can see that picture at rosieonthehouse.com. I will put the answer in now that we have the answer of what that orange ball is. And
by the way, they don't grow like a palm with a central trunk. They grow prostrate on the ground, about 5 feet tall maximum height too. So it's a big, you know, 5x5 structure when it's fully mature. Ours at my house, we planted about 10 years ago, and they're still only about 3 feet tall.
Real
about
slow
3 feet
grower.
Across. They are. It takes about 15 to 20 years, and mine have never borne fruit. Mine are still small.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you if you'd like to join the conversation and ask Mr. Eisenhower a tree question. Our topic this week is sustainable pruning.
Right. Last week we started discussing sustainable pruning practices. And we began by talking about the ANSI A300 standards and how it's important to be sure that your tree care provider is understands the how to describe what they're planning to do at your house or your business. You don't want to just be cutting somebody loose on your trees. And what's beautiful about the standards is it gives you the basic branch diameters that are going to be cut, the percentage of foliage that will be removed. But even before that, it states the objectives, you know, that you plan to undertake. And then you begin to select the types of pruning that you'll use to accomplish that objective. And that kind of takes care of the science. People have always said, how do I prune my trees effectively? And I've always said that pruning is both a combination of both art and science. And if you get the science end of things taken care of, the art tends to take care of itself. And that's what we discussed last year about the pruning standards. If you kind of follow the pruning standards, which are based on best management practices for tree care, you're going to have beautiful, healthy, and safe trees. Well, today I wanted to talk about the art end of it. We talked about the science last week, but there's a design precept that states that form follows function. Basically, that says that the way something looks results from the way something works. If we understand the function of something, we can better understand its form. And plants in nature have a specific form. And what we want to do, our objective in pruning, is to try to complement that natural growth habit. And we try to direct people back to basic observation. You know, we look at a tree in nature, and we want to see what does it look like in its native setting. If we understand its function in the ecosystem, in the landscape, how it actually works, we can understand some of the design principles behind its branch structure, for instance. As I drove up this morning, a lot of Palo Verdes in the parking lot, and they've been stripped up really, really high, you know, 10, 15 feet up in order to provide vertical clearance. Well, that's great. But the problem is Palo Verdes were never designed to be stripped up that high. There are some trees that have a nice central trunk, and they shed the lower branches, like a ponderosa pine. Mature ponderosa pine doesn't have any branches up to 80 feet. Well, you think about that. Well, that plant was once 3 or 4 feet tall. What happened to all the lower branches? Well, it spontaneously sheds its branches as the tree gets taller and taller. The branches at the top are photosynthesizing more actively, and the tree simply gives up on the lower branches that don't have the available sunlight. But that tree is designed to be a tall, vertical tree in the landscape. Ash trees are the same way. You have these basically a central trunk, and then you have large scaffold limbs, and you can walk under those trees. You can have those plant those trees intentionally with the idea that you're going to have a lowest permanent branch that will be something above your head height, so you can walk under it safely. Palo Verdes and mesquites are not designed that way. They're genetically designed to grow like large shrubs in the landscape. If you think about this, the main stem grows up, and about 2 feet off the ground, some large scaffold limbs will grow. And they grow out and down, and sometimes they'll even rest on the ground. And you've seen this out in the wild. You'll see these big mesquites and Palo Verdes have this large side branch that grows down 5 or 10 feet from the tree, hits the ground, grows out along the ground, and comes back up again for available sunlight. It's an amazing thing to see these snake-like branches that are actually resting like elbows on the ground. Well, that large main scaffold limb supports all the subsequent branches above it. So then the next branch that grows off the main trunk nestles down onto that lower branch, and the next branch above that nestles down on top of the one above it. So you have this large mushroom-shaped tree in the landscape. And how safe is that during the monsoons? Really safe. It's really safe because then the wind blows up and over that structure, and the tree isn't affected at all. It's a very stable, sound structure. What do? We take our Palo Verdes and we cut those main scaffold limbs off the bottom, and we try to trim it up to become a tree like a pine or an ash, which have a central trunk, and you can lose those lower branches. Because that's what pines and ash trees do spontaneously in nature. They lose those lower branches as a tree matures, and it supports the upper canopy. That's how you get your big oak trees and your big sycamores that don't have any branches for 30, 40 feet up the trunk. They at one time had all those branches, but they lost them as the tree matured. What happens with our Palo Verdes is we create a beach umbrella, and we wonder why the trees aren't staying upright. You know,
a few came down this week, huh?
They came down.
You busy?
All over town. Well, I just was at a customer's yesterday, and she her front yard was littered with branches from blue Palo Verdes that had been limbed up so high in the past, 15, 20 feet up, and they just they can't take the wind. Those upper branches really require the lower branches for security, for stability, and those branches are long gone.
I know why they do it. They're trying to get a low-use tree as a big shade tree, and a lot of people don't have the area to let that come back down and canopy. So if you're looking for low-use, tall shade, what would be the proper tree to plant?
Well, I just mentioned a couple. Your pines are beautiful examples of that. Ash trees, southern live oak, your Quercus virginiana is a great choice because, again, it has a central trunk that you can train and you can start slowly over a period of years removing the lower branches until you reach a height that is good for your landscape. If your lowest permanent branch, you want to be at 7 or 8 feet. Over the course of 3 or 4 years, as the tree gets taller, you can start removing those lower branches. But again, genetics determine the suitability for those types of trees, and we need to know what that mature size is supposed to be.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation.